And we're back.
Where did we go?
I don't know. I tell you what, though, I was fighting for a seat with Cotton Eye Joe. Yeah, that's not going to resonate with anyone under the age of 40. Well, it's been a minute.
It seems like we've basically introed the last, I don't know, five recordings that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, the ad revenue isn't really rolling in, so.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that we're not taking this seriously.
It's almost like we're only doing it on a casual basis whenever we have time and we feel like it.
Good news for you out there, the one of you.
There's at least one. Actually, I went to a family function this weekend and ran into a, you know how there's I don't even know how to describe him. He's family, but not family directly, right? Like in my case, it's like it doesn't matter. He's family. Jace, who's a boyfriend of my second cousin, I think. That's how that works. Anyway, it's not important. And he was like, hey, I listened to some of your episodes. I'm like, well, that's cool. So if you're still listening, hi, Jace. So there are some. There's people out there who are listening.
Well, for those of you that do, the good news is we really haven't gone anywhere. We just haven't had the chance to sit down and start recording. I honestly don't remember what we were talking about in the last few episodes that made it to air, but yada, yada, yada. My employer blew up after 18 years with them. So I'd been starting a new business on my own. Had to move at about the same time. Life's been hectic, I guess. Mm-hmm. But everything's cool. Okay. Not to spoil things and foreshadow later discussion. But what's really happened is I finally got Telson to play Satisfactory. And it's literally the only thing he does now.
That's not quite true. I occasionally eat, I occasionally sleep, and I do go to work once I run out of vacation time.
Well, before we get into it, man, what are you drinking?
I is sort of apropos of this episode, of am drinking a local beer called Low Hanging Fruit, which is a fruity sour thing. It's a pomegranate and blackcurrant sour. It's very, very tasty. Sweet, a little bit sour, not too strong. Good summer beer.
Have you finally worked through everything that Rich and I left in your fridge?
No, I have actually bought some more stuff. A fair bit of the beer that Rich left behind is still in the fridge, largely because it's a little bit like stronger, heavier stuff. I tend to like to drink lighter things in the summer. So that stuff will hang around until the weather's a little bit cooler. Speaking of which, it is ungodly hot here for Northern Canada. It's like 30 degrees outside.
Important factor, 30 degrees with like 700% humidity. So it feels like about 46.
When you go outside, you are just instantly drenched. Yeah, it's hot.
Which for those that use freedom units is what? I don't know, 110, 111. Not the 30, the feels like temperature.
Oh, yeah. It's probably feels like about 105.
Yeah. Well, I did manage to go through what little stuff I brought back and had nothing in the fridge. So I'm stealing some Smirnoff Ice Original Crisp Citrus. We have my sister-in-law and our niece staying with us for a little while. And I believe this belongs to them. So I probably need to replace it when I'm done here. But yeah. That's what I'm drinking. Never had it before.
Well, it sounds refreshing.
Sounds summery.
Yeah.
If I can get it open.
It's been a while since you've opened a drink.
Also true. So what have you been up to the last, I don't know,
month? It's been, well, you guys came, what, the second weekend in July? No, May 2-4. It was the 24th of May weekend. So it has been almost July now. So it has been a month. Been playing a lot of golf. My work situation, we we were without a contract for a year, and we have now ratified our contract. Nothing signed yet, but it's basically like we've all agreed that it's, everyone thinks it's a bad deal, which means it's probably about the best deal that everybody's going to get.
Mostly status quo or some?
The money is fine for like the last 3 years because inflation did normal things over the last 3 years, more or less. We're still sort of down from the COVID era like everyone else. Yeah, a few changes to things basically just to clarify stuff. You know, generally good. Good enough anyway. I'll be able to pay my bills. That's a good thing. Oh, and on the good news front, my promotion has finally been signed and is ready to go.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much. How that works in or when that takes effect, I don't know. And for clarity, my job duties don't really change. It's just a promotion into a new salary band. In theory, it's more responsibilities on paper, but I basically do the same job to a higher level of technical expertise.
So pretty much the ideal situation then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Life doesn't change much and people pay you more.
Yeah. Yeah. More or less. I mean, I get to continue doing a job that I love and working with a team that I very much like for a boss that I admire. Yeah. It's good.
Hard to complain about that.
It is. And I can't. I've been very, very lucky.
Well, do we want to get right into it then and talk about how your job is interfering with your ability to play Satisfactory?
Satisfactory is very much a job. I would, just before we start that, I would like to say that your new boss is kind of a jerk.
It's true. It's true. For those that don't get the joke, I am my own boss. Now I'm operating independently. I have, call it bosses in quotation marks, that work with some of the organizations that I'm working with. But the reality is I'm operating fully as an independent subcontractor. And I've been pretty hard on myself, I've been setting some reasonable but pretty aggressive hours in terms of just trying to get myself established and rolling. And that has left my availability for things like, I don't know, recording podcasts a little, You know what? I don't want to say so much lacking because I've had the availability. It's been so mentally exhausting ramping things up that come the weekend when we might consider recording, it's like, oh, I just want to do nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we'll play D&D Sunday, maybe, but otherwise, maybe. Yeah.
Summer's tough, man.
Yeah. You know, and I've been doing a lot of work around the new house too, putting up fences, yard work, gardening, grown up stuff.
Oh my God, adulting. Isn't it the worst?
I think I went like 3-4 weeks without even playing video games.
Oh my God. Do we need to do a wellness check?
You might. I might not make it through this, honestly. No, I'm getting to the point where things have been good. I'm getting to the point where I now want to dial it back, slow down, limit my hours a little bit, make better use of my hours, not in terms of like efficiency of work, but like efficiency of billing.
Mm-hmm.
I have work that is more profitable than some of the other work that I do. So realigning those in terms of priority and how I kind of block out my week will allow me to slow down to, you know, a reasonable number of hours. And to be clear, I haven't been doing like 80-hour weeks or anything dumb like that. Like I've been trying to stick to 45-50-hour weeks as I've been ramping things up. And that includes the time that I'm spending dealing with like the business management side of things, right? So, you know, my bookkeeping, my invoicing, all of that kind of stuff on top of just developing and managing the relationships around that. And I don't know that I want to, I'm not going to try and work 30 hours a week and pretend that I have a real job or anything, but I want to at least make sure that it's like a 40-hour week where I don't always feel like I'm go, 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 if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like I'd like to be an easy 40 hours. You know, Friday, I can kind of ease off in the week. Monday, I'm not immediately putting out fires first thing when I get on. That type of thing. Will I ever get there? I don't know, but that's a goal.
Yeah, who knows? Speaking of never getting there, we should talk about Satisfactory.
I used to be an adventurer like you.
Stay a while and listen.
We probably need to set this up, because we've talked about Satisfactory on the show a few times. Always sort of me saying, this is a really great game and you should try it sometime. And you're like, yes, whenever I have time and or money and or whatever, maybe I'll get around to it. It's on my wish list. So going into what was your birthday, right?
Yep.
I decided, well, fuck it. I'm tired of waiting for him to pick this up. There's only so much bullying that I can do. I'm just going to buy the game for you so you have no excuses. And in one single act, I might have ruined your life?
I wouldn't say that. Although I was almost immediately sucked in. Like the introduction to the game, the opening sequence had me hooked from the beginning. It was just the premise, the tone. And this is something I think that gets missed when people talk about what makes a good video game. Like the tone of this game is really, really good. There's just the right amount of snarkiness. There's just the right amount of game there. Because it's honestly, you could play it not like a game. Like I'm not. I'm playing it like a factory simulator. I'm just building stuff because it brings me joy to build stuff. And I'm not finished. I'm in like phase four, I think.
To contextualize how sucked in you've been. Now, this is a game that you can very much leave running in the background, right? Like it's not, you know, a game that you necessarily have to turn off. It will heat up your room. But I know that you've left this game running overnight.
I have never left it running overnight. I have left it running while I go like to lunch or dinner. Yeah.
I was looking at time played because I've been playing this game for years through early access. Did another big push in 1.0 when it launched. And we were sort of talking about how in that playthrough, I'd built my way up to the point where I need to then spend another 200 hours or whatever it is to sort of take things to the next level. And I sort of put things down at that point. They'd announced the features for patch 1.1. And I'm like, okay, well, that'd be a good time for me to pick things back up. A lot of good quality of life stuff in there. So I happened to look at our played time on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I got to actually look at the numbers here. I think my played time was something to the effect of 580 hours since I bought this game. I looked at Telson's played time, 628 hours. Now, it's been a hot minute now since I bought this for him. Like, that wasn't that long ago. When was your birthday?
April 12th. So that's...
What's your social insurance number?
Sorry, one, while I'm collecting three, data. 456-78, fuck you. That's 3 months, basically, since my birthday.
How many hours are in 3 months?
Well, let me put it like this. I have probably spent as much time in the game as I have spent at my job. And I was a solid 150 hours into this game before I realized this game is a job. Like it's a job. It's a factory. You're building a factory. You're doing this task. There's a, you know, snarky computer assistant who says you need to do this. And you're like, oh, okay. That seems like a good thing to go do. Oh, there's a challenge here. I've got to, I don't know, kill an alien pig. And then I've got to build a thing. And then I've got to like gather some leaves in order to feed the thing that burns a fire that does the electricity and then run some wires to do the thing that pulls the iron out of the ground that you use to make plates and rods. And then you use that to build another thing.
The last time that we were recording a few episodes, we were talking about this other game that you were playing, this sort of like spiritual successor to EverQuest. And you're like, oh, this is the game that I'm going to sink a lot of time into. Like this is going to be a thing for a long time. Since you started playing Satisfactory, how many hours have you put into that game?
Zero. Like literally zero. I have loaded it up twice in that time in order to keep up with patches, and that's it. Now, to put that in context, that is in early access, and there's a lot of stuff that's kind of missing. And I enjoy it, but it's the sort of thing that you have to schedule time with your friends to play, or you have to go play with strangers, which I have no interest in anymore. Right? I'm old and crotchety now. I can't put up with other humans. This is something that after like 300 or 400 hours into this game, I realized one of the things that I enjoy about this game the most is that you are literally on a whole planet by yourself. Right? There's nobody pushing me to do something. There's nobody saying you're bad and you should feel bad. There's nobody saying I'm counting on you to do this, other than the computer assistant who's doing it in a very tongue-in-cheek, doesn't work, suck kind of way.
We'll get into it a little bit more, but you mentioned that it is a factory simulator. I'd even like go a meta level and say, yes, you're right, it is a factory simulator. But what the game really is at its heart is a productivity simulator. Mm-hmm. And one of the great things about it and where it really, really hooks you is that like the only barriers to the productivity are the barriers you create for yourself. So while somebody will look and say, Jesus, that sounds a lot like a job, you can say, yeah, but it's the best job in the world because there's nobody crawling up my ass. I'm not dealing with bureaucratic bullshit. There's very anti-capitalistic sort of overtones, very tongue-in-cheek in the game, right? Like at no point do you ever feel like you are sort of the pawn, like in terms of like doing a job for somebody else. Like everything you do in this game is for your own benefit. There's no right way to play the game. You sort of set the goalposts for yourself. And then after 100 hours, you realize, I didn't set the goalposts high enough. So you move the goalposts, and then you get to those, and then you move the goalposts, and then you get to those. And that's how you get to 500-600 hours playing the game and never even beating it, right? Like, you've probably approached this like Baldur's Gate 3, where you restarted it several times, I would assume.
I did, yeah. So, yeah, to put that in context, I'm 600 and... Say I'm probably about the same amount of played time that you've got. Like I'm probably 550 or 575 hours played. And the rest of it is time that it's just sort of sat idle while I've wandered away and let things accumulate. I've restarted the game 5 times. But my last time I have significantly more time into. Like I probably have, I'd say north of 300 hours into this play. And I've torn it down 3 or 4 times. Right. Cause there's this sort of, I don't know, cycle that you go through. Cause you do your first sort of setup in order to get things and it's this spaghetti mess. Right. And then you get sort of this foundations, you start building things into a big old flat field. And then you get a blueprint maker and you start thinking, well, okay, so how can I stack these things together like Lego so that they do it for me? And the latest patch had the, you know, auto connect thing. So I've been playing with that. And I have a helix for a train track that I'm just so proud of because it literally goes up in the tightest little spiral you've ever seen. And it's just like, there's just stuff like that. Like I built sort of a set of matching factories. So when you sort of are up high in the world and looking across the place, you just see all of these buildings and they look sort of similar. Right. And they're just sitting on top of a resource node and making a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's really what I've been getting joy out of I'm at the point where like I could manually build a bunch of stuff, manually ferry a bunch of stuff to build the space elevator to go on to the next phase. And I'd like to, cause I do want to do the nuclear part of it. But like there's all of these things that I can make that I need to have some of that I don't have a place that's building them. So I would have to do it myself at the workbench. And I'm like, nope, I'm going to go through all of them. I'm going to put down a factory that builds the thing, right? With a storage container on top with a dimensional storage depot on top of that so that it's just always full. And I'm going to do that for everything. I made myself a list. I have a spreadsheet. And I've been going down the list and saying, okay, I built that. Okay, I built that. Okay, I built that. Okay, I've made a train that goes from here to there to do that. I've switched over my power to compacted coal so that I can add more of that just as a stopgap until I get to nuclear. Yeah. you know, and I've got most things sort of set up. I need to now do all the stuff that does assembly, right? And then there's a couple of things past that that you have to do in a manufacturer or a blender that I need to set up. And I'm probably another 100 hours before I go to the next phase. And I'm not in a rush. That's the thing I love about this game. We've talked about this, I think, before, where like there's different kinds of games, right? Like there's some games like Baldur's Gate where it has a beginning, you do a progression, and then you get to the end and you're done, right? And you can play it again, but it's basically the same game again with a few different touches. This one to me feels a lot more like a game that you can just continue playing forever. Because you don't win, you don't lose. It's like Dungeons and Dragons. I would suggest from a game perspective that Satisfactory is more like Dungeons and Dragons than Baldur's Gate is. Because Baldur's Gate is a lot like a story about Dungeons and Dragons, right? And this is much more, here's the world. What do you want to do, right? How do you want to do this?
I haven't thought about it that way, but I definitely get what you're saying there. To be clear, like, you know, for those that have played the game does have a victory condition, so to speak, at the end of it, sure, right? But that is not the game. And this is what's hard to describe to people that haven't played it. If you look at the game is incredibly clever, first of all, not only just in its like execution, the game itself, but the way it onboards you, it's the only game that I've played that sort of works backwards. Like most games, it's like, oh, they really got to work hard to make a good first impression. Some of the mm-hmm. best elements about a game are the first 12 hours that you're playing this game. Where for something like Satisfactory, where it has to sort of encourage you into other aspects of the game, it almost has to go out of its way to be a little bit boring and a little bit tedious in those first hours. It never tells you explicitly like what to do aside from like the very, very, very start of the game, right? Mm-hmm. All of those systems, all of those mechanics and the way things layer on top of each other are things that you discover as part of playing the game organically. You know, you just look at what's there. Like if I sent you a screenshot of the game and you'd never played it, you'd look at it and say, oh, it's like checklist simulator.
Yeah, very much like that.
You got to make X number of these, and then you turn it in, and then it gives you X number of these and X number of these to make now. And that is true. The milestones in the game are superficially about that. But it is so much about optimizing and re-optimizing the process, the journey, like D&D, right? Journey, not destination. Yep. It's clever about how it sort of introduces you to those systems, introduces you to the complexity of the systems. A lot of the cleverness is the things that it doesn't tell you. A lot of the satisfaction in the game is discovering those elements yourself. And I don't mean walking over a hill and seeing something, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, discovering the little tricks that you can do, discovering the sort of nuances in the system that are intentionally not made abundantly clear. Something as simple as resource nodes in the game, right? Mm-hmm. Like you start at a resource, you know, everybody sort of starts in the same kind of general area as a rule. You get plopped down and it's like, okay, you need to find iron. And you have a scanner, it'll show you sort of where iron is, and everybody generally goes to the closest iron. Oh, there's a big batch there, and it's a pure node. You start interacting with the pure node, right? And it's like, oh, now I need to go find some more iron. And then you start running into nodes that are normal, impure, and you start realizing sort of the impact that all of that stuff has on what you're trying to do. And now you have to sort of build around those little wrinkles in the system. And then you get introduced to things like overclocking. And that's a game changer in and of itself, because while your resource nodes are not increasing in quality now, you're optimizing throughput of resources based on these new systems. And, you know, everything spirals out from there. So once you get to the point where you're like overclocking your miners, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, now everything downstream from that, I just need to rebuild it. I want to rebuild it.
Yeah.
I don't even want to try and like fix what's there. I just want to tear it all down.
Start again.
Start fresh. And that is kind of the game.
Kind of. There's something that I'd like to sort of to throw out there as the other side of the coin, though. Because there is definitely like there's a bunch of different ways that you can approach it. And you can approach it from the I want to sort of optimize everything. And I have not. I've gone for a little bit more of like it needs to be aesthetically pleasing for me. Mm-hmm. And I have not optimized. Like there are all kinds of places where machines stop and start and stop and start. I have all kinds of places where I've just intentionally set it up so that this is going to be producing more than I need. And I put a sink right there and I just destroy whatever the overrun is because mm-hmm. I don't care. And I know Rich finished the game or he got to sort of the end of whatever it is. And like he said himself, like I, it was just, everything was spaghetti and I just literally, what do I need to do next? And I'm going to do that to get the thing that I need done. And you can play it like that. And you can play it like almost like a dress up kind of a game where it's like, I just want to make everything really pretty. Mm-hmm. The one limitation that I have found that I don't like is that building roads, it's really hard to build a curved road. It can be done. It's just kind of tedious.
Yes.
And I wish that there was something, because the way that they set up like doing railways, like I find trains incredibly satisfying. They've mm-hmm. done that really well. I think that the way that they've set up pipes and what are the things? Conveyor belts. Other than the fact that they don't climb slopes smoothly, incredibly satisfying. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it's like, well, you can put down asphalt and you can paint stripes on it, but if it's not straight, it's ugly. Unless you take a whole bunch of time to do it very tediously. But I mean, everything that is a minor gripe. I mean, everything else.
It is. And it's a sort of a fine. No, let me rephrase that. I have difficulty determining what is intentional and what is not in the game design.
Yeah.
You know, like when I talked about the sort of beginning of the game where I said it's a little bit boring, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of sort of standing in front of your crafting table or in your hub. And pressing a button and listening to tink, 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 tink
for which like 40. I hear in my sleep now.
Yeah. And that's intentional, right? Because it's to encourage you, oh, there's an alternative to this. Yes. I should explore that. So when I look at something like trucks, I played mm-hmm. with trucks substantially in like, not my last gameplay, but the one before it. And the system is still quite clunky.
Oh, very.
And I question, like, is it clunky to encourage you to get into trains?
Well, I will say this, probably, because I played with trucks for a moment. Oh, and this brings up another thing that I want to talk about, which is distance. But I played with trucks for a minute and then realized I can just do this one thing to push into trains and I can just make train tracks. You know, it's so much easier. It's so much smoother. I have a set of blueprints for trains now that I'm really, really happy with. I have so far resisted the temptation to even look at anyone else's blueprints, right? I know that you sent me the one you have for your train tracks, and I just decided, you know what? I'm going to make my own.
And for the most part, I've not looked at anybody else's either. And I'm in the process in this new gameplay of like, trying to rethink my approach to that stuff too. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they introduced in the latest patch is a vertical nudge.
Huge.
So the ability to place something down and before, and only recently, like it was, I think, either the last or the second last update released before 1.0 where you got the ability to nudge. I think it was maybe update 7 where you could move stuff around like horizontally on the plane that you set an item down just to sort of position it properly. The other thing that you can do now is nudge things vertically. And that is a game changer because you have these blueprints, a blueprint sort of maker machine that you can place down that is essentially a cube, perfect cube, like, but it has, you know,
it's a 3D volume.
Printer. It's a big ass 3D printer. And so much of what I was doing before didn't really take advantage of the height. Like, I would stack mm-hmm. some things up too high where, you know, I'd put constructors down and then I'd have a small thin foundation above them. And then I'd put constructors above and I'd, you know, sort of split things up so that I had a fairly condensed sort of system for doing stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. But I only ever did that with sort of the smaller machines, you know, smelters, constructors, right up to assemblers, but manufacturers and refineries and any of the big stuff, I never took advantage of that verticality. So now that I have the tools to do that and make it easy and sort of blueprint design, and you should probably explain, in the game, you have the ability to sort of, rather than laying individual machines and individual components out, you can create these areas like of pre-built sort of things where you can have dozens of machines and all of your belts and pipes and all of that is pretty much set. So what it really encourages you to think about is like modular, scalable, tileable, repeatable elements mm-hmm. that you can use to easily build factories at scale, right? Instead of having to manually place, because you get to the point where you're like pulling resources out of the ground with overclocked, like top tier miners and stuff like that. You're trying to figure out what to do with 1200 iron per minute kind of things, right? And it's you don't do that with a couple of constructors and a couple of smelters on the ground anymore. You're building factories that take up a lot of space, and taking that sort of modular blueprint approach makes it easy to sort of accommodate that style of gameplay. And then that's just another set of knobs in the optimization process of this game that you get to turn. And your blueprints are no doubt completely different from my blueprints, since you haven't been looking at them. I'm sure my blueprints are very, very different from the stuff that I've seen other people doing in game. I've watched some videos about Satisfactory. I'll get into that a little bit later. And I've been intentionally like not looking at the specifics of some of the blueprint stuff that they've been doing. And there's entire different approaches to basically everything, which is
everything.
Great. You know, for a game where the basic setup is almost identical for everyone, by the time anyone is 1 hour into the game, the paths have completely diverged.
Oh, yeah. You're completely different. I'm interested to see. I'm not entirely certain that our friendship would survive the two of us building a factory in the same world, but it would be interesting to try it. I guess you can also set up persistent worlds. Yeah. That would be neat to try as well. One of the things I touched on earlier was space, right? Where you look at, like, here's an iron node and here's another one that's like 250 meters away or whatever. Yes, and everything is in metric units. I think you can change that, though. I think so.
Yeah.
So you set up and it's like, oh, it's like two. That's forever away when you're running. And then you go to build a train station with like eight cars in it. It's like, well, this train station is longer than the space between these two iron nodes. I noticed a similar kind of a thing in Baldur's Gate, where based on travel speed, things seem kind of far apart. But based on actual space, when you sort of measure it, things are actually kind of close together. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, the map is huge, right? Like, I'm 300 hours or more into this playthrough. And I'm still only in the northern desert. And I've just barely broken into, there's kind of like a swamp just south of that, which is where I found bauxite. And other than that, I really haven't gone anywhere because I'm still actually building up that area. I don't know. The thing that impresses me about it the most is that you can do what you want. And the community that seems to have come around it, rather than saying, no, you must optimize and here is the meta and here is the only efficient way to do it. People are literally, like, everything that I've seen is play the game the way that you want. If your goal is to cover the world in pink foundations, go do that. Because if that's what is fun for you, then do that. right? And it's, I don't think that I've ever seen a game ever where the preponderance of people talking about it weren't saying, this is how you must optimize. This is the most optimal path.
Yeah. And even when you look at like subreddits, right? Like the subreddits for the game where you have people that, the only real comparison that I would make for this is like as a developer going and looking at Stack Overflow, for an example, where it's like, I want to run a problem by people just to sort of bounce it off of them, like-minded people, to see if maybe there's something that they're thinking of that I'm not thinking of, right? Like, I'm not saying solve this for me. And there's a good chance if you do that, like post a Stack Overflow, 90% of the time you're going to get an answer back that says, no, don't do this. You're wrong to even ask the question, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, okay, that's not productive, not helpful. Like, you're just being a dick for the sake of being a dick.
You've wasted your time and my time.
Yeah, let's assume for the moment that I understand that maybe what I'm asking here isn't ideal. It's certainly not the way you would do it, but there's some value here. Let me throw it at you and put yourself in my situation. No, you'll just be, you know, you're wrong for asking. Fuck you. You're a terrible developer. Go kill yourself, right?
That's, you're bad and you should feel bad.
Yeah. And most games, especially games that are builder, creative games, have subreddits where a lot of that sort of similar mentality exists. But you look at the community that's been built around this game, and it is 180 degrees the opposite. Yes, you're always going to run into the occasional outlier where, you know, okay, you're just being a little bit of a dick and, you know, whatever. But for the most part, everybody just seems to be taking joy in enjoying the game together, but enjoying everybody else's approach to the game too.
I see, like, when someone will ask, like, how do I do this or how do I optimize this? They will often get a couple of different approaches to say, you can do it like this. You can check this out. Here's a way that someone else did it. Here's how you can do that. Here's how you figure that out with a pretty reasonable amount of patience, which is one of the things that this game very much rewards. Like, patience is rewarded in this game.
Yes.
And it usually comes with the sort of tag end of it, which you can do it like this. You can do it like this. You can do it like this. You can look at this, but don't worry about it. Do what makes you happy.
Also, you don't need to worry about any of this, right? Because it is a game where, like, you don't have to optimize it to the nth degree. Nope.
Or at all.
You know, and you set that line where it is optimized enough for you to be satisfied. And that line is going to change. But, like, there's games where, like, the mechanics require you to be perfect. Think about playing StarCraft, right? Where you have a build order and you have to execute it quickly, specifically one flub, and you basically lose the game in your first 2 minutes of play.
Yes. And some people enjoy that. And if you enjoy that, great, good, go do it. I'm not good enough to do that. I don't enjoy it. And I don't enjoy getting my ass handed to me in the first 2 minutes of the game.
But what's unique about Satisfactory is there's enough meat in the sandwich to appeal to those types of players that do want to optimize to the nth degree.
There's a speedrunning community for this game.
As part of catering to that community, it doesn't exclude everybody on the spectrum up to that point that just wants to bang metal together and make something or optimize things enough. You know, you mentioned getting into nuclear. I've never gone through the full nuclear process in any of my playthroughs yet. I want to do it in this playthrough, but you don't have to. Like, you can get to the point where you beat the game without doing it. Like, if your idea for beating the game is getting to the top tiers, you know, your space elevator shit, submitting your last sort of crap, that is technically speaking beating the game, but that's not the main reason you're playing the game.
I have a question for you, because you have finished the game, right?
I technically have not. I finished the game in early access. So that last tier didn't exist in early access. So I technically have not finished the 1.0 game. My last playthrough that I played before restarting with 1.1, I could very easily have done it. I was in the process of manufacturing all of the stuff that I needed. I literally just hadn't taken it over to the space elevator to do it. At that point, I was getting ready to play with nuclear, and I'm like, maybe I'll do a fresh playthrough and then do it this one. So,
yeah. The reason that I restarted this playthrough actually is because I switched to experimental 1.1 when it came out, because the vertical nudge was just so much of a game changer. Mm-hmm. But the reason that I asked that is that I want to know, like, when I finish, can I keep playing? Like, can I keep building factories?
Yeah.
Well, then I have, because that's one of the things is like, I'm enjoying it so much. I don't want it to end. But I'm okay with like sort of finishing the tasks as long as I get to keep building factories. Because really what I want to do from here is go from making factories that are efficient and effective to making factories that are pretty.
Yep.
Right. I want to make beautiful,
and also
beautiful
efficient and effective to a certain extent. Yeah.
Yeah. Efficient enough.
One of the things that they were very, very good at, Coffee Stain, is realizing what the game was, right? Like all of these things that they add to the game aren't what the game is. The story, the sort of process of moving through the tiers and feeding the space elevator, that's not the game. That is sort of a carrot for a little while. And then beyond that, it's just something that's there.
It's a very basic structure that I think is very helpful for people who are looking for more sort of game as opposed to sandbox, because it is very much, I mean, it's Gary's Mod writ large, right?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, it's very much, and like, think of it like a literal sandbox, where mm-hmm. as you're playing around, digging in the sandbox, making sandcastles or whatever it is that you do, occasionally you find this little nugget of something. Oh. Here's an interesting little bit of story thing that's coming out. You know, here's an alien artifact. And as you find more of those, some sort of subtle stuff happens. It doesn't change your gameplay at all. It's just this layer of flavor that sits on top of it. There's a, I don't want to say mystery, but there's sort of a theme as part of the tongue-in-cheek sort of flavor that gets established early. You're on this planet. You're part of the save the day mission where you need to basically exploit and extract resources from a planet to send them up into space. Mankind and the kittens and or puppies are all counting on you. And that sort of tongue-in-cheek narrative sort of evolves a little bit as you progress through the game. But even it isn't the game, right? Like, it's just the flavor. It's the extra little that sits on top of this super satisfying core gameplay loop. And the core gameplay loop can completely exist without the rest of it and still be satisfying in its own right.
Yeah. I mean, you can play this with the sound completely off and never hear from anyone ever, and it still would be great.
You would be robbing yourself of some really awesome stuff.
Yes.
But
yeah,
you're right.
You could. Yeah. No, and I really do enjoy the snarky comments from Ada. You know, things like, all of the other explorers have gotten to this point much, much sooner. And I'm thinking to myself, are they clever enough that if you're speedrunning, it doesn't tell you that? Or if it gives you congratulations if you hit a certain milestone? Or am I just always that slow? Or does it just always say that? And I don't know, but I want to play again really fast just to see if it changes.
Well, they've put so much like thought into the writing. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that you don't even notice, like ignored isn't the right word. I consumed but didn't put too much thought into a lot of that stuff in early access because I knew a lot of it was changing. And some of it mm-hmm. did, some of it didn't. But there's even subtle stuff. Right. That has a lot of meta narrative to it. Like, you are a person, right? This person that's placed on a planet. You literally drop ship sort of pod. That's how the game starts. Here you go. You're on your own. Save the day. But, you know, you run into a hostile environment where there's alien creatures that, depending on the game mode that you're playing in, might want to fuck you up, or, you know, you can fall off a cliff, or there's environmental hazards. Ooh, there's these rocks that are spewing out sort of green gas. And you know, when you're walking in it, you start taking damage. And it never really clicked until, I think, my second last playthrough, where even the way they communicate that is so tongue in cheek. You get a warning indicator that shows up on your screen, damage to fix it property. Mm-hmm. So now you're left with, well, is it that they're talking about their suit and they value the suit that I'm wearing more than they value my life? Or am I, in their eyes, the fix it property, right?
You are. Have you ever gone out of bounds?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm expanding my coal power plant and I went like right to the edge of the map. Literally, I have two coal power plants that are outside the edge of the map. So I can't get to them to like configure them. They still work. But going out of bounds, it's like fix it property cannot exit fix it property. Fix it property will be destroyed if it does not enter fix it property. I mean, they just, so much of it is so clever and just so well done. Like it made me giggle to the point where I was laughing so hard I almost didn't make it back in bounds before I died. Mm-hmm. It's so wonderful. I did watch a video with, I don't know, community manager, somebody, I don't know, some guy from Coffee Stain anyway. It popped up in my feed because I've been searching a lot of Satisfactory stuff and doing a whole bunch of calculations and stuff. And he was answering frequently asked questions. And one of them is like, are you planning on putting in a PvP mode? And he's like, no, that's not what our game is. To go back to your point about like, they know what game they're making. They're like, this is supposed to be a chill vibe type of game. Like you're building a factory. And to your other point, I've turned all of the alien monsters or whatever to passive mode. Because I'm like, I'm not interested in combat, right? Like, I know I need to occasionally kill them to get their flesh in order to do research and stuff or whatever. But like, I'll just drop a couple of bombs on them on the way by or hit them with a car, right? I don't need to prove myself in mano-a-mano combat with these things.
And that is particularly interesting, considering the discussions that we've had in the past about like your approach to Baldur's Gate 3 and playing things on a higher difficulty for that increased challenge. You found a game where you could find the fun in it without that sort of difficulty. And that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Like it's funny because a lot of the times I get bored with games because I get sort of 2/3 of the way through and I realize, okay, so it's a bunch more effort to get to the end. I don't know if I'm enjoying it anymore. And this game, it's, I don't care if I get to the end because I'm just enjoying the ride. You know, I do occasionally get sort of a little bit discouraged when I think about like just exactly how huge the task ahead of me is to, you know, set up a factory for, what have I got? Let me actually look up how many, open a window here, how many factories I have to set up for. Games Satisfactory categories list. I have 43 individual items that I need to make, and I am currently as far as it's not quite linear because I've jumped ahead in the list a little bit, but I'm on like item 13. I definitely have done. I have 16 and 17. I just did 18. So I have of 40, I've got maybe 15, and I'm going to make a factory for all of them before I move on to the next phase. Right. So that's a lot of time. Like I probably have another 100 hours before I even think about moving on to the next phase in the space elevator. I'm enjoying it though. I'm like building a train network.
And to be clear for those listening, like you don't have to do it that way at all. Yeah. If anything, a more common approach is to sort of only build what you need when you need it and try and sort of, okay, well, I need to build, I don't know, fused modular frames, which is sort of a mid to late tier kind of component that you need to eventually build a ton of. And it's like, okay, well, rather than trying to figure out how to get stuff from my aluminum factory and stuff from my modular frame factory and all of that stuff to it, often what you'll do is you'll be like, okay, well, let me look at the map Because eventually you get to the point where you can drop these radar towers. And what was sort of an early game challenge of finding resources becomes just super trivial. And now you can look at the map and it becomes more of a puzzle. It's like, okay, I know that if I look at everything that's downstream to get to this component that I need to build, I need a whole bunch of iron. I need a whole bunch of bauxite. I need a whole bunch of, you know, whatever it is. And you start thinking about building a factory and then starting with raw materials. And like this factory is going to go from raw materials to fused modular frames. This factory is going to go from raw materials to, you know, X, Y, Z. Like, it's just that's probably a more common approach than let me build a factory that is literally just churning out as many iron rods as I can and then move stuff from that factory to other factories to start.
Well, to be fair, I'm not actually trying to move the. It's not so much that I'm building a factory for everything and then trying to collect all of those things. Basically, what I've done is I've done that as a substitute for some kind of central storage.
Yes.
So I have a factory that builds iron rods. It pumps it into a dimensional depot. So I just always have it on hand.
Yeah.
Right. So, I'm short five of these. Yeah.
Perfect.
So when I get to the point where it's like, okay, I need to build a billion fused modular frames, I'm just going to find the resource node and go like, this is going to go from raw materials to this part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it's close to somewhere where I'm already building part of the thing, then sure, I'll build a train line to bring that. But otherwise, yeah. I mean, I have four other biomes that I can go and grab resources from. Like, I'll have lots.
Yep. So I probably need to go back here and blame Ian for everything. Yeah, I know you're looking forward to this episode. Because we touched on something, but we didn't really get into details, and that's just how much this has now spread like a plague.
Oh.
Right? Because years and years ago, Ian mentioned this game to me, and he, I think, had bought it at one point in time, maybe played it a little in very early access. But how he hooked me was, and we've talked about this YouTube channel before, Let's Game It Out.
Mm-hmm.
He said...
Oh, I've seen. Oh God, the spaghetti factory that's just 100. It's just like, just this goes like vertical everywhere. It's just like this spaghetti mess of conveyor belts. I'm like, how can you even? Oh God, like if you had to troubleshoot that, you can't.
Yeah,
you just can't.
Yeah, yeah. His conveyor weaves, and he's done it all. Basically, he is an example of like a person who intentionally tries to not break the games, but play them in the complete opposite way most people would play the game, for entertainment purposes mostly. And you should definitely check out his videos. I've mentioned them before. You should definitely, definitely check out his Satisfactory videos. He's probably done about half a dozen of them at this point. They're all great. It's also a good snapshot of what the game used to be like in early access, because a lot has changed. But Ian sent me his videos and it was like, okay, I'm going to pick up this game. And I think at that time it was like update 4 in early access. And I enjoyed it and I played it through till, you know, update 7. And then I waited for 1.0, or maybe I played update 8. That's the one where they went Unreal Engine 5. Anyway. Played 1.0, played 1.1 now. I've been basically playing this game on and off for years at this point. I finally got you to play it. We had that sort of weekend at your house in May 2-4. And on the spot, we said, well, you know what? Let's bring our computers in case we want to get some sort of LAN party action in or something like that. We didn't do any of that. But what we did do is convince Rich to buy Satisfactory, which he played. And of us, he's now the only person that's technically beat the game, I guess, apparently, in its full form.
He's got the achievement.
His son had played the game in early access, but is it his dad who's now also playing the game? Like, it has just been this chain reaction of getting people invested into this game and having it consume and or ruin their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it all starts with Ian.
It does absolutely consume your thinking. Like, cause I'll find myself sitting at dinner, sort of staring into space and going, well, I wonder if I should build a train line or should I build a drone port? Like, how do you fuel drones? Okay. So then I should probably wait till I get to nuclear, because you can fuel drones with the waste from plutonium reactors and stuff. So I don't know. One thing that I will say is that almost everything that I have found in the game that I thought, oh, that's useless, I'll never use that, once I get it, it's like, oh, well, how did I live without this, right?
Yes.
There was the hover pack, and I'm like, well, it only works in the presence of electricity. Like, I got like all kinds of places on them. I have the jetpack, I'll just use that. And then I got the hover pack, and I'm like, oh my God, this is so much easier.
I've actually, the hover pack is one thing. I've used it before, but I have never, and again, a lot of this comes down to sort of the verticality and stuff, right? I've never made good use of it. I often will just lean on my jetpack. And when you're doing factory design and stuff like that, where you're trying to make efficient use of your space and stuff like that, I know why the hover pack is so superior.
Oh, it's fantastic.
But man, like I'm just so used to it. And I use the jetpack with liquid biofuel, which basically lasts forever if you're sitting there tapping on your space bar. Like, you can very easily, you know, hypertube cannon from one side of the map to the other and beyond, right? Full control, land anywhere on the map with liquid biofuel. I mean, you can do it with most of the other ones too. There's different trade-offs, but lasts forever. So like, I can pretty much do anything that I would need to do with the hover pack with that, just awkwardly. So I very rarely, you know, take the time to switch.
I found myself actually switching in midair from time to time, where I will just like, I'll run off and go, oh, I'm out of electricity, right? And you tab out and put the hover pack in, or you put the parachute in, and you, the parachute I've used less, but it is still useful. It gives you, this is something I discovered by watching a video that showed up in my feed. It gives you slightly longer actuation with interactions. So, you know, all of those rocks you have to blow up to get the slugs out of, if you're parachuting across them, sometimes you can just reach in and take the slug out hovering there with the parachute. Anyway, I mean, that's not super critical, but I found it useful for building trains, because then you can go, all right, so attach this here and attach that there. I've also built like all of my trains go across concrete trestles. So I have, like, you know, the track gets attached to the track, and then I build track in between the things, and then I actually extend the concrete pillar down to wherever the ground is, just to make it look good. I've started building like massive factory floors, but a lot of my stuff now is in enclosed buildings with windows and lighting, right? Which is silly, but it just, like, it's so joyful when you hook it up and it's like, okay, the lights are on, so I know I have power on this floor.
So have you gotten to the point where aesthetically you're starting to use signs as lighting?
No, because I haven't gotten to the point yet where I'm manufacturing crystal oscillators, which you need for those LED signs. It's on my list. Like, I have the node, I have the raw materials. I just haven't built the factory that actually does that yet. But yes, that will happen. I want to do ins and outs, right? Like, here's like, because I have conveyor walls that the have the imports or ports in them. And I want to label those as, you know, it's this many in and that many out. Just because I can, because why not?
Yeah. So, needless to say, we're officially a Satisfactory podcast now.
We are no longer a Baldur's Gate 3 podcast. It's been several months.
We're probably going to talk about this game again. So we'll save some of it for next year when we record our next podcast, or, you know, whatever that is.
In the fall.
Now that you've played this game and you are a very different voice from me, as a listener who hasn't played this game, who may or may not have an inclination to, what is your elevator pitch? Sell this game to the masses. Let's spread the plague.
I'm not sure that this is okay. First of all, this is not a strength of mine, doing this sort of thing. The game is the absolute perfect combination of simple to get into, complicated to master, but but you don't have to master it to enjoy it. It is a great game to be bad at because nobody cares. And it is something that you can get good at if you want to, but you don't have to. And it is everything. If you've ever had a job that you enjoyed and you found that satisfied your itch to do something productive, this is that job without the boss. It's basically what it is. It's a job without a boss that's incredibly satisfying to do the work.
Well, we've mentioned that we got together for a weekend, so we should probably shift gears and talk about that before you have to go.
All right.
We got together for D&D.
We did, and I'm going to start with a hot take. I love you all. That weekend could have been one day shorter.
Yeah. So we all arrived on a Thursday evening afternoon-ish.
Mm-hmm. I think
so, yeah. And we went home Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
It could have been, and I enjoyed like every minute of it. Like it didn't feel like Monday night. I was eager to get home. I think Tanya was. But by Tuesday morning, it's just like, oh, okay, it's been a while.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing is that we sort of packed a lot of stuff into those, what was it, 5 days, like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, mm-hmm. 4 days, I guess. So we were basically in each other's back pocket for 4 days. And I'm pretty sure that I've mentioned before on the podcast that I'm a massive introvert. So having, you know, three extra people in my house for 4 days was a bit of a strain, right? Had nothing to do with the people. It's just the fact that they were, you know, warm bodies in my personal space.
Nope. I totally get it. I'm glad that it was more than like 2 days.
Yes.
Because we got to do things that we wouldn't have been able to do. So for context, my wife and I went up to his place. His wife and Telson, like we all play in different D&D groups together. Rich, another one of our D&D players, made the drive up from Pennsylvania. So there was five of us primarily. Yep. But then we ran multiple D&D sessions. We ran a session as our group. We then ran a sort of Avengers Assembled type session where our group plus the other group that you were DMing through the
DMing
sort of winter and spring got together, and we had a session together in our characters from both of those games. And then we ran, I did a little one shot just kind of on a whim the next day with zero preparation. We played a lot of board games. We ate a lot of sourdough and pretty much everything else, drank way too much.
Yes.
That was the weekend. Do you want to talk about the D&D specifically?
I kind of would. It was like I was really, really proud of myself. The only thing that didn't work out quite as well as I would have liked was I introduced sort of in-game timekeping like a month or two before, where the date actually had some kind of impact on both games. And it didn't work out as smoothly as I had hoped, because I had planned for like a long time that we were going to do a crossover between the two campaigns, right? The two of them happened sort of in the same world. You guys were in Waterdeep and they were in Salt Marsh, which I put in the Mirror of Dead Men, which is really just north of Waterdeep.
Yep.
They were burning through days, right? Like, and it was kind of funny because that group does a little bit more sort of role play type stuff, right? Where they will have long conversations with NPCs that don't really have. I don't want to say they don't have story impact, but they're not like driving the plot forward. They're just kind of not filler, but it's more like background. It's more like fleshing out the world and fleshing out their place in it. They like adopted a retired sailor from the town in order to, you know, hire him as a carpenter to fix their house. And that was literally like an hour and a half of conversation. But at the same time, right, like they were just burning through days in game, with travel and whatnot, and saying, oh, we'll just wait for 3 days, or we'll go hang out at the tavern for 3 days, right? And our group was like doing like maybe a half a day per session, right? So I'm like, oh, there's like 2 weeks here. How am I going to bring these two things together? I mean, in the end, I just went, you know, snap the time shifts and stuff. The other challenge was that Cindy was playing in both groups. So she had to either choose a character or play two. And it was a big group. What do we have? 7 people there that day? There's something like that, right? And everybody sort of came together and the story meshed. The shtick is basically that there's some strife among the pantheon of the world. And several of the gods have had their divinity stripped and scattered across the world. And the PCs are tasked with bringing them together and kind of amalgamating them one way or another. You guys did a really good job, I think, of sort of preparing that exposition for each other without really understanding what was going on. Mm-hmm. And you fed into each other's understanding of it a little bit, which was pretty cool. You know, and then big fight with a demon. And your wife got to stick an immovable rod up its ass, which was the highlight of the weekend, I think.
Either that or the beans, yeah.
The beans were pretty good, too.
No, it was good. I enjoyed the other group. It was interesting to just sort of sit back at the table and watch how we felt each other out, as interesting as that sounds. Because we had players that, I don't know, I don't know if you've run into this situation as a player where you join somebody else's group where they have an established way that they do things and you're hesitant to play the game your way, mm-hmm. right? Like there's this tendency to want to conform to whatever the other people around the table are doing. And part of that is just being a good D&D player. And, you know, I don't think that like the way we play versus the way they play was so different that meeting in the middle was a big deviation for anybody, but it was just this interesting sort of like warm-up period where people kind of didn't want to talk a lot. And then there was a couple of characters that sort of just stepped up. I jumped in as Mutt and just did Mutt shit, you know, making jokes and playing the dumb, which helped bridge the gap. And, I'm drawing blanks on the name. Cleric.
Natalie
started not getting attitude, like, sorry, let me rephrase, not attitude as a player, but like character attitude. Mm-hmm. And that sort of opened the, hey, are these people good people? Are these enemies kind of thing? And it like coming at it from both directions, we met in the middle. And once we met in the middle, it was just sort of game on. And it was really fun. Everybody around the table, great players, talented players, talented sort of storytellers in their own right in different ways. It was fun to see a player at the table, at our table, that brings the bell, right? To bash on the bell when she's tolling the dead and stuff like that. Like, that into it.
Yes.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. And I know that sort of thing isn't for everyone, but for me, it was a lot of fun.
It was, I specifically wanted to start that in-person game in order to invite Natalie to play.
Yeah.
Just because she's so much fun to play with. She has, the very first time that I played with her, she was playing a bard. And she makes notes. Like, oh my God, does she make notes? And they're fantastic and it's awesome. But with the first time she was playing a bard and she would make the notes and she would, at the beginning of every session, she would do like a synopsis of the previous session, and she would do it as a poem set to bardic music that she had like downloaded and would play on her phone. Like it was just, it didn't fit in with the group that we were playing at the time, because the group that we were playing with was a little bit more tactical and they were a little bit more focused on like, you know, okay, how do we invade and beat the orc fort, right? And she's just like, she's just all about her character. Right. When she sent me her backstory for this character, it literally changed everything that I was going to do about the campaign. Mm-hmm. Like it's everything just, okay, all of that is out the window. We're doing this now. Right. Because it was that kind of a story where it's like, okay, this has got hooks. This has got potential. This has got things that I could do. You know, when you ran the thing that we did where I played the cat from outer space that didn't fit the world, right?
Yeah.
The backstory that she wrote was exactly what you were looking for, where it's like, this gives me everything I need to work with. the unfortunate thing with me as a player is that I don't know how to conform. Like, I don't know how to fit into someone else's world. I only know how to throw out, here's something that maybe you can use and maybe you just ignore. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'll get to it towards the end of this segment. My Tuesday night game is sort of the main campaign portion of it is on hold. I ran a sort of 1/2 shot and we're now jumping into a mini campaign that one of my players is running, probably for the next 10 or 12 weeks. So I get to sit back and be a player for a little while in something that is very, very different from what I would do. And I'm conforming isn't the right word, but I'm trying to find my own way as a player in this type of game. It's going to be a little bit of a challenge in a good way.
It's hard when you spend so much time as I make the world, I make the NPCs, I make the story. Everything happens sort of in my head, and the players definitely have input, right? And they have an impact on the story, but the whole thing happens right inside my own head. And then when you step into someone else's world, it's like, well, I don't know where I stand here.
Yeah.
Right. Like, where do I put my feet? It's.
Well, and there's also a tendency as a person who's usually the DM to overcorrect in the opposite direction, right? Where like, a good game needs to be collaborative, like not just the gameplay, but like the creation, the story, all of that needs to be collaborative between the players and the DM. And as a DM stepping into the player role, when you don't do it often, there's this tendency, at least for me, to just be like, I don't want to put my stamp on this world. This is somebody else's thing. I'm going to sort of passively play and enjoy, like, you know, I'm going to contribute, like I'm going to be an active player and a party member and stuff like that. But there's this reluctance to do anything which adds too much flavor, do anything which adds too much meat that's connected to the world and the story and the plot and stuff like that. You don't want to be channeling the DM in a certain direction that's yours. You don't want to be shifting the tone of the table in a direction that's sort of uniquely yours. And I find that I tend to go too far in the opposite direction and overcorrect. And I think you probably do that as well.
I do. I absolutely do. And it's funny because one of the only complaint that I have about my wife as a player is that she quite often puts a little bit too much creation in the world when she's a player. Right. And she's gotten a lot better at it. But the first campaign that we played in, I was the DM and she was a player. And it was her first time playing. Mm-hmm. Right. But she would do things like tell me what was happening in the town. And I'm like, you know, like some of it is okay and some of it's not. But finding the line about where that is and where it's not. Right. And I'm exactly the opposite where I'm like, I'm not going to tell you anything about what's happening in your world. I'm going to be like, well, what's happening?
Yeah.
Describe the scene to me.
Yeah. And really the ideal player sort of sits in the middle, right? Because that's where the magic kind of happens.
Yes, exactly.
I know you have a timeline here. So before we wrap things up, I just want to touch on the one shot.
Oh, the Shane is the villain?
Yeah.
This is one of those things where like I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. As a one shot, it's great. I mean, trying to run a campaign like that would be.
Oh no, that never, ever. It was one of those things like the weird setup for it was that like it was 11:30 the night before and Cindy was like, yeah, we're going to do another another D&D session tomorrow morning and you're going to run it. Just do a one shot. It's 11:30 at night. So I was like, okay, well, I don't have anything prepped that requires prep, right? It's like, what do I want to do? I mean, I could just do sort of an arena style thing, and that's kind of really what it was. But how do I, you know, give it a little bit of juice? And I remembered seeing this little statuette sitting on the windowsill in the guest bedroom of a cat. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, I could have a cat as a bad guy. That would sort of be interesting, you know, this drop this big figurine, like this big giant cat thing on the table. And then it sort of turned into, oh, well, you know, what else could I have that's kind of like that? Could I pull the environment in? Like we got shrunk down and we're in the middle of, you know, Cindy and Telson's house. And then that turned into, well, what if we had everybody play their characters, but the minis had come to life? So you started off, the setup was like you were in these dark tents, right? There's no door to these tents. Basically, they were in like mini bags or dice bags sitting sort of at the corner of the table. And they managed to cut their way out of the bags and they see this sort of arena battlefield set out in front of them. There's a river in the middle of it, a bridge, stuff going on the other side. There's this big castle-like thing on the far side of the battlefield, which was literally the DM screen, but tried to keep it sort of vague, right? Not telegraph what I was doing. I think I probably got about half an hour into it before people started figuring it out, which I think was the sweet spot.
Yeah, it was just about right. It was mysterious enough that it took us some time to figure it out, but not so mysterious. Also, it wasn't a big enough part of what sort of the tactical situation was to make it, okay, we have to figure this out before we can continue. Mm-hmm. Like there was enough stuff where it's like, okay, we're doing this, but we're also trying to figure out what's going on here.
But it became a really sort of meta type thing. And I think this is the part that I really want to highlight because I enjoyed it the most. Once the reveal happened, they figured it out. And I was the ultimate bad guy, literally standing behind the DM screen. And the minis were fighting me physically. Mm-hmm. As players, a group of you started doing things that were next level meta, where one of you would jump into my dice box and start like trying to steal the dice or throw the dice at me so that I couldn't perform abilities. Like you weren't just interacting with me as if I was the bad guy and instead of a mini, it was my body, right? You started interacting with the mechanics of not Dungeons and Dragons, but a player and DM sitting around a table playing Dungeons and Dragons. You knocked down my DM screen. You stole some of my dice. You pulled things across the table so that they were too far for me to reach and grab them, which limited my ability to do DM stuff until you shot me in the crotch enough times that, you know, you won.
It was a good session. I enjoyed it a whole bunch. Many laughs were had. It was a good session. It was a good weekend. I enjoyed every moment of it. I think if we were going to do it again, and I think if we're going to do it again, we should do it like 1st of July, 4th of July long weekend. I think that probably would be a little bit more.
Oh, so like next weekend?
Next weekend, next year. But yes, because May 2-4 was just a little bit chilly. I also think that we should probably plan to do some things out of the house. Potentially in like smaller groups, even like, I don't know, go fishing, go for a boat ride, go for a paddle,
maybe
go to the beach, have a swim, something. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
it's one of those things where
like, to think about it
for sure. It's one of those things where like you're getting together with your D&D peeps that you play with online. It's a shame to not take as much of an opportunity as you can to enjoy playing together and in person as the novelty. But I think we probably could have got away with just two sessions. And then some other shit for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like still want to do stuff and spend time together. It's just, we also have to have some, let's go and do, you know, other stuff besides sit around a table and roll dice.
Cool. All right. Quick parting gift before you go.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Anybody want a peanut?
Going back to the Satisfactory flavor, there's a YouTuber named I'm Kibitz who is... My wife doesn't understand how I can stand the guy because she thinks this is the exact thing that should annoy the hell out of you. He's got this whole sort of like Puffin Forest vibe to him, like even down to the voice, where my wife has a hard time telling them apart. And he does a lot of Satisfactory videos, and he's the guy that like just does the next level shit. He cares about aesthetics, but also like optimizes everything out of the yin yang. He's second full playthrough that I'm watching that he's on now. He's getting ready to go nuclear. It's been a months-long project. He's the kind of person that will use, by the time that he's finished playing the game, every resource node on the map. And he's got a plan for it in advance. I don't recommend watching it as an example of how you should be playing Satisfactory, but as an example of all the things that Satisfactory can offer. Check him out. I'm Kibitz. I am K-I-B-I-T-Z. Don't worry about the old stuff. He's just got into a new series as of 1.0, and it's been fun to watch.
I think I have seen him, and yeah, he is very... It's the kind of thing where I look at and go, yeah, I'd like to build that maybe someday. I'm not going to start with that now.
No.
But the potential is there, and it's nice.
All right. Well, it's been good talking to you, man. Hopefully I'll get this edited and out sometime in the next week or so.
I mean, that would be awesome. We could get right back on a regular schedule of once every 2 weeks or 6 months.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah, something.
Probably not in between, just either or.
Oh, yeah. Minimal, maximal. All right. Well, I've had a beer. I need to go drive drunk. Please edit that out.
No, it's going to be moved right to the start.
you can't edit audio.